Hi everyone, and welcome to this session where we're going to talk about buyer personas, which relates to this digital marketing strategy concept. So one of the fundamental issues is to create buyer personas. This is again the figure to position the session to the course framework. So today we're going to start talking about competitive advantages. And as mentioned before, competitive advantage answers to the question of how to meet customer needs in ways that competitors cannot match. And hence, the first fundamental issue is to create buyer personas, which is about generating deep understanding of what the customers are actually looking for. So, what are their needs and preferences? And for that purpose, the customer persona is a good metaphor and tool to really dig deep into the customer needs. The learning goals for this session are simple. So it's just about creating buyer personas based on customer needs. So really understanding customer needs and creating buyer personas that help you out to think about your competitive advantages and how do you differentiate from the competitors. As a bit of a background, just kind of talk about the STP process in marketing strategy a little bit. So the dominant wisdom in creating a marketing strategy advises firms to follow the so-called STP process, which stands for segmentation, targeting, and positioning. The segmentation refers to the process of dividing the overall market into groups where the so-called potential customers in each group have similar needs for a particular product or service category, while also maximizing the differences among the groups. So you're trying to divide the overall markets into segments that are different from each other. But each segment should represent customers who have similar needs. So that's the fundamental idea of segmentation. And I have underlined here the similar needs for a specific purpose that we're going to discuss later on. So it's really important that the segmentation is based on the needs and not something else. Once the segmentation is done, the company can move on to targeting, which refers to selecting the customer segments that the company wants to serve based on two dimensions. So these targeting decisions are based on two fundamental dimensions. The first is the segment's market attractiveness. So which segment or segments are financially valuable to serve? So usually the criteria that fall under this dimension might relate to things like price sensitivity. So usually the customers who are not very price sensitive are more financially valuable to serve. Or related to that, it might be related to the buying power of those customers. So do they have a lot of money, for example? Or maybe it can be related to something like how much do these customers require service from us? So it's more financially valuable to serve those customers who do not necessitate a lot of service or personalized or tailored treatment. So that might be also some things that fall under that dimension. The second aspect is just as important as the first one. So obviously, most companies try to target the customers that are financially valuable to serve. But the second question is, which segments the firm is more capable to serve compared to the competitors? So what are the core skills and capabilities that your organization has that help you out to differentiate from competitors so that you can meet the needs better than your competitors do? So this is the other fundamental. Now, and obviously, it's about the balance of these two. So you want to have financially valuable customers that still are represent customers that you can serve better than the competitors. The third step in the process is positioning. which is about improving the firm's relative advantage in the minds of its target customers. So once you've done the segmentation and you have selected a specific customer segment, then it's about those actions that align with the needs and preferences of the target customers. So that might be related to improving the product or service, maybe adding some features or making things more convenient for the customers. Or then it might be related to your processes and the experience that the customer has. So that can be obviously related to many different things, but something that that improves the customer experience overall. So it's maybe easy to buy or handle different business-related issues with the services that you offer. But that is about the positioning, and obviously also relates a lot about the brand values that should be aligned with the needs and interests of your target customers. Now, buyer personas build on this dominant STP process, but the idea is to deepen the analysis and enrich the description of the target customers. So often when we do the segmentation, it is often done via CRM data, or it is done via surveys, and the segments tend to remain quite superficial. So the idea of this buyer persona metaphor is to really do qualitative research on who these customers really are and what kind of needs they really have. So often the segmentation data gives you some sort of stereotypes of different customer needs that exist in the market. And the idea with buyer persona is to really go deeper into those needs and preferences that the customers have. A little bit about the evolution of the STP process. So where have we been and where we are going today? So I would say in the 60s and 70s, especially at times when we didn't have the internet, we lived in the world of mass marketing. So the idea was to produce a product or service and then spend a lot of money for advertising, which was done in mass media, so television or newspapers or radio, usually. And the idea was to create those associations with your product to signal the product quality and so on. And the idea was that, or the implementation went so that it was the same message for all customers. And that's why we call it mass marketing. So there is no personalization involved. Perhaps somewhere around 80s and 90s and time after that, the trend has shifted towards something called niche marketing. So marketers realized that the same product or service doesn't really appeal to all customers. So they need to create more specifically defined products and services for distinct customer needs. So some people want a cheap product, some people want an expensive product, or let's say premium product. And then you really need to think what kind of products and services would be offered for these types of customers. So often companies might have different types of segments, not just one, but then they try to market the product differently for these different segments. So this is the most common approach still today. But in recent years, there's definitely been a movement towards one-to-one marketing, which advocates tailoring of one or more aspects of the firm's marketing mix to the individual customer. So you don't have the mass marketing, you don't even have the segments, but you try to really tailor the experience for one customer at a time. And I guess I could argue that it's mainly an alternative for companies who are producing digital products or services. Might be difficult to execute in all contexts, but here are some examples of each different approach. So mass marketing, I think Henry Ford is one of those very famous guys that well represent mass marketing era. So Henry Ford once said that You can have any color you want as long as it's black. So Henry Ford, obviously the famous car manufacturer from the US. So this was pretty much what mass marketing at the extreme was. So you had usually one product, and it's a lot about efficient production of that product, and then just using a lot of advertising money to make customers to buy that product. But as you probably noticed, if you're been checking any car advertisements, or if you have followed Ford, the company, it's quite obvious that they do not anymore only offer black cars, and this is because of the increasing competition. So at the time when Henry Ford said this, they were, as far as I know, the first car manufacturer in the world. So then you can really focus on this one product. But once the competition starts to increase, then there'll be car manufacturers who will focus on the niche segments, so different segments of customers that have distinct needs. And then perhaps this one size fits all, just one car doesn't appeal to many customers, but they want something more specific for their needs. And as said, this is the era where we are at the moment. Here is one example from Rolex, which is a very upscale watch manufacturer, very famous brand. And this is a good example of a product that is addressed for pretty niche segment. So, as far as I know, Rolex watches are very expensive, so that already delimits the target customer group quite heavily. And looking at the different alternatives or different product versions that they have, different models, they are specific to certain types of needs. So this is, for example, the Yachtmaster watch, which is not just addressing the very affluent customer groups, but probably the ones who are interested in sailing or boating and things like that. So this is the watch for them. And then they have separate models for some other types of needs. So this is a classic example of niche marketing. So you divide the customers into segments, and then you select certain segments that you want to serve. Well, one example of one-to-one marketing would be Netflix or Spotify, and these types of digital services that are genuinely tailored to the individual users. So they learn about the user preferences, what kind of movies or music or whatnot entertainment the customer is interested in, and then it can recommend and tailor the experience for one customer at a time. And obviously, a lot of machine learning and AI is happening in the background. But this is sort of like the movement, but I would still say that one-to-one marketing is perhaps not very realistic for all kinds of companies. But the ones who manage to do this are very much aligned with the current trends in marketing, which is more and more individualized, more and more specific for different types of customer needs. The biggest problem, perhaps, in segmentation is when I look at companies and how they kind of define their segments. It's very like common term in marketing segmentation, but in many companies it remains poorly understood and largely relies on demographics rather than customer needs and desires. So instead of focusing on what motivates a customer to buy a certain product, they the segments represent some sorts of descriptions of who the customers are. So probably the most common segmentation criteria are age, gender, and geography. And by using these types of segmentation criteria, you end up with segments like our key target segment is 20 to 35-year-old females in Northern Europe, as one silly example. And as you can see from the segment, it doesn't really, it tells you who the customers might be, but it creates very little information about what the actual needs, why would they want to buy or why they are not buying the product. Which again means that when it comes to, let's say, the positioning phase, it's difficult to position the product for this type of target audience unless you really know what this target segment is interested in. So the better way to do segmentation is to focus on specific needs. And often in the marketing literature, the customer needs are divided into functional needs, social needs, and emotional needs. So this is the classification I'm using in this example. So what are the functional needs of our customers? So which product or service features a person needs or desires? If we continue with the car example, so what kind of features customers are looking for in the car? Is it about the size, or is it about the seats, or is it about the performance? Is it about what is it about? So these are the functional needs that customers have. Then there are maybe next the emotional needs, how a person wants to feel when using or buying the product. So it goes a little bit beyond the functional needs. Almost any car that you buy will take you from place A to B. So that serves the core functional need. But driving different cars might be attached to different types of emotions. So maybe some cars are more comfortable to drive, or you feel more safe when you're driving a certain car. And then finally, the social needs. So how a person wants to be perceived by others when using a product or service. And this really shouldn't be underestimated, the power of social needs. We are social animals, we human beings, and we are very interested in how we are perceived by the other people. So buying a specific car brand, for example, gives some sort of a signal about who you are. So if you have this very expensive car, it might be like a status symbol for you. Or maybe you want to buy, you have the social need to buy an electricity car because you think that it's more sustainable and you want to signal about your sustainability as a consumer, for example. These social needs are often very subconscious processes, so we don't necessarily even realize our own social needs, but they exist and powerfully shape our customer needs and what kind of products and services we buy. So, based on this need-based segmentation, our target groups could look like this. Our key target segment weighs quality over price, wants to be seen as trendy, and appreciates convenience. So, compared to this other example, the 20 to 35-year-old females in Northern Europe, this target segment already gives you a pretty good idea of what the fundamental needs are within your target group. So they are very much interested in the quality. So we need to focus on the quality of our products. They want to be seen as trendy. So that gives us some hints for how should we position our brands? So how do we make us look trendy? And they appreciate convenience. So, how do we make the purchasing process and customer experience convenient for our customers? So, these are, you know, some of the things why the segmentation should be done based on needs rather than demographics and customer profile information. Now, as mentioned, often these segmentation studies are done via surveys or CRM data, and they remain often quite superficial. And now the idea of creating buyer personas is to dig deeper who these customers really are. So creating a buyer persona, which refers to a representative of the firm's ideal target customer. So it concerns the investigation of the persona's needs and desires, motivations, challenges, goals, and so on, and the resulting thoughts, feelings, and behavior at different stages of the customer journey. So first you need to understand the fundamental needs and preferences and desires, and then you also need to think how those play out at different stages of the customer journey or purchasing journey or whatever metaphor you want to use there. One really fundamental thing is that the persona should be always based on customer research rather than imagination or intuition. So, the common pitfall is that the company sort of invents the customer personas on their own without any research to back up. So then you come up with those various stereotypical kinds of customers. And it's really important that you actually do customer research to figure out who these customers are. And there are many ways and data sources for building customer personas, but I would highlight the role of interviews with customers and frontline employees. So if you really want to understand what these customers want, you really need to interact with them and ask those questions that are may not be apparent in your, let's say, analytics data. So, why are you purchasing from us? Or what are the things that you appreciate when you buy a product category X? What kind of things are important for you? What are the things that make you frustrated? And things like that. So you have to dig deeper into the customer needs to be able to develop products and services that align with those needs. Clayton Christensen, who died a few years ago, but anyway, he is one of the most well-known business and innovation researchers in the world. And one of his last pieces that he ever published was this article called Know Your Customers, Jobs to Be Done. And Clayton Christensen had observed a problem that relates to the digitalization trends or how we use digital media and different types of analytics tools. So his key argument was that businesses collect and analyze customer data more than ever, but do not understand journeys or sorry, the customers any better, leading to failure with new innovations, technologies, and marketing communications. So even though these digital tools allows us to track customer behavior, we can see what they do and what are the ultimate outcomes of their behavior. We don't know a lot about the motivations behind their behavior. So according to Christensen, there is the excessive focus on analytics and correlations with statistical analysis. So this customer looks like that, or these customers have bought this and that. And the patterns in data are exciting, but they don't mean that one thing caused another. And then he also claimed that there's the inadequate focus on what customers are trying to achieve in a particular circumstance. So what's the fundamental goal that they try to achieve, or what's the fundamental problem that they are trying to solve by buying a certain product? And what are the circumstances when the customers want to buy something? What is the situation like? And according to Christensen, we should pay a lot more attention to these things to come up with better product services and experiences. So his solution or proposed solution is to distinguish between customer profiles and problems people need help with. And he uses this metaphor or term jobs to be done to describe the problems people need help with. It claims that the successful innovators identify poorly performed jobs in customer lives and then design products, experiences, and processes around those jobs. So a lot of this marketing work should be focused on what are the problems that your target customers have, and then start designing better products, better services, better processes, better experiences. And the key learning here is that you're unlikely to identify the customer's job to be done by any statistical approaches. So if you use your data from your customers or how they behave in digital channels, you might get some proxies, but to really get deeper into what the customers are looking for and what's frustrating them, you need to interact with your customers. So the common pitfall in digital marketing related to the previous slide, here's I think one powerful quote from themarketingland.com. There is something tragically ironic about most online marketers. Our job revolves around convincing people to do something, but we often have little to no actual relationship with the people we try so hard to persuade. Instead, most of us huddle behind computer screens trying to convince numbers to cooperate. And it's really easy to see this movement among digital marketers, especially. So a lot of digital marketers, they're creating campaigns. They're using analytics to see, how many people were exposed to this ad, how many people clicked, how many people ended up buying something. And it's important to do that. I'm not saying that, but you don't get very deep into what the customers would have wanted to buy. You don't get a lot of information on what were the motivations behind those purchases and clicks. So I would say that rather than always just looking at your performance type of data via analytics, it would be advisable for the digital marketers to actually interact with the customers and try to understand what they are looking for, what is maybe difficult to do on the website, what kind of information is missing there to make a good purchasing decision, or maybe if they are existing customers, so what kind of web services might be helpful for them to make the most of the product or service? What are the actual needs that are not realized with our current marketing and product design, for example? And one thing is to understand those underlying needs and motivations and preferences. The other really important or powerful metaphor is this customer journey idea. So understanding how does the customer journey looks like from the customer's point of view. So it's not just about understanding the needs, but at best, you also understand the behavior, thoughts, and feelings across the customer journey so that you can design valuable experiences and differentiate from the competitors and focus on what customers are trying to do in a particular circumstance. And in this figure, you will see an example of customer or buyer persona journey mapping of a garage company. So a company that provides some car maintenance or repairs. And this is a pretty good idea to think about how to improve the customer experience of your target customers or buyer personas. So first of all, go through the steps that the customers need to take before, purchasing, what kind of research they do, how do they book appointments in this instance, how do they arrive and check in, how do they wait during servicing, how did they check out, what kind of follow-up activities are there? And what are the customers thinking in these different stages? What are the questions in the customer's minds when they are researching a suitable car maintenance or repair company? What do they think when they're booking the appointment? What kind of issues are in their mind? How could you help them out with that? What did they think when they arrive and check in, and so on? So, what kind of, I would say, especially what kind of questions the customers have in mind that you could probably answer with your service design or maybe informational content on your website? And just as important is to think about the emotions. So, what kind of things in the current service make customers frustrated? What do they like about? What do they hate? What do they appreciate? How are they feeling? Are they feeling uncertain? They're not quite sure what they are doing, or what is it? What is it that goes through a customer's mind? What do they think? How do they feel? As said. And if you do this type of research, then the output would give you hints on how to improve the customer service. So when you identify the key questions, then you can answer them with your web content or web services. You can, when you know what frustrates or makes customers uncertain, You can try to address those feelings with your web service or content, or obviously it depends on the case quite much, but that's the general idea. To understand what the customers are thinking and feeling, what kind of questions they have in mind, what makes them uncertain, and so on. And then you try to address those things with your service design and your content on the website or mobile application or wherever you are delivering this service. Here is a template for building buyer personas. If you just Google around, you'll find a bunch of different types of templates, but here is one example. And again, you can see the, demographics, again there, which in my opinion are maybe less important than many of the other segments. And I would specifically focus on the goals and challenges, just as we discussed this customer's job to be done kind of thing, and getting a deep understanding of the needs. Of the preferences. So, what is the primary goal of the customer? So, if he or she is buying a product, what does he or she want to achieve with it? What kind of challenges the customer has in the daily life or in the daily business life? What are the challenges they are sort of struggling with at the moment? Those are really important pieces of information to really understand what the needs are, and they will help you to figure out what could we do about those. So how does our solution actually addresses those goals and challenges? And maybe the other thing is common objections. So it's often more powerful to start from why the customers are not buying rather than why they buy. So when you address these common objections with your service design, product features, customer service, whatever the case is, that will probably lead to those things that make the customers also buy. So often it's good to ask the questions from the other way around. So not so much like what is good, but what is bad about our products, services, or customer experience overall. Okay. This was the session. I hope you got a good idea what customer personas are and why we need them. So the idea is to generate in-depth knowledge about the customer needs and desires, their problems or goals that they try to achieve. And as said, often we're going to use qualitative research methods. So we need to interact with the customers, either via interviews or maybe some observational data, but we really need to dig deeper to be able to create product services and experiences that align with the interests of our target customers. Thank you very much for joining, and see you next time.